Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Mkalibu and your team, the legal team, parliament, and staunch state law advisors, good morning. This is a continuation of the meeting of the 5th, where we agreed on certain things. And there were some few outstanding matters. Among them is the balloting and clause 44, that is with the labor brokers, and other related clauses that are linked to those two main clauses in them. Can I give this opportunity to who's going to lead us on the presentation?
Thank you. Good morning. I will continue with the clauses that the committee has reached consensus on. Okay, the first clause is clause 6 of the bill. Of the bill to omit and on page 5 in line 36 of the bill to omit who voted in that election. Those are the three options that the committee requested us to have a look at.
Thank you.
Just to assist, I can remind the members what this clause 6 is about. This is a clause that requires trade unions to ballot, that introduces a third loop in the right to strike presently before trade unions go inside. They got to go to the CCMA, convention, and you must have then a certificate. If either the dispute, the CCMA has not resolved the dispute within 30 days, therefore the CCMA has not met the 30-day period, the union can go inside, give a notice and go inside. If the CCMA meets that 30-day period, they have conciliation, there's a deadlock, the CCMA issues a certificate, the union can give a notice for 30 days of the strike. This proposal says, after doing all of those, that the union now will have shown that it has balloted its members. There's a secret ballot. That's the essence of the clause that my colleague talks about. And it's linked to clause 13, the same clause, but clause 16.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, this is the presentation of the legal team and the colleague. Let us engage. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, last week we discussed this quite a lot in the meeting that we're continuing with today, and we talked about actually rejecting option one. So it is an option. So I think that we should go with option one on this and remove this clause from the proposed legislation. Thank you.
Honorable Khanale.
Chair, I think it's obvious what I'm going to say. I support point two under option two. And my view is very clear. It's a matter of procedure. It's not a principle issue. It's a matter of procedure. And I don't see anything wrong with making the actual workers who have got the right to go on strike to make that choice. Why are we so afraid that the workers who are supposed to go on strike should have the right to the last say on whether they should go on strike or not? And quite frankly, if the majority of workers says we vote to go on strike, then that right is protected. And if the majority of workers says we don't want to go on strike, that right cannot be protected. That's my view. But the actual choice is with, not with the leadership of the union, not with the shop steward, but the actual worker on the shop floor who must make a decision about whether I want to go on strike or not. That's the principle we are dealing with here. It's not a procedure, but ultimately the decision must be made by the worker on the shop floor.
The good Honorable Khanal on this matter. Honorable McDowell and Honorable Van der Westhuizen, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think we made our position very, very clear this one last week. We are at this stage where we are now with this amendment bill purely because we have had experience in 1995 to see what did work and what did not work. We had a mushrooming number of unprotected strikes, they even call them wildcat strikes, and this legislation is trying to make sure that we can bring some order. To quote an old leader I used to know in the oil industry, in the interest of good order, balloting brings that. Once there has been a ballot by the members and the majority say we've got to go to strike, the sense is that it will have on the fringes a lot of violence are diminished. Clearly, there is nothing that can be completely without any violence or perfect. But we've got to do, as legislators, the best thing that we can do to make sure that we minimize the violence. And balloting is one of those measures. And interestingly enough, we are here as the representatives of the people because people have balloted. They came and elected us to be here. And so when people question us, we can always say, you gave us the mandate to be here. So we really strongly support that the balloting must be retained.
Thank you, Honorable Mutawa. Honorable Van der Westhuizen.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think, I hope, that there's one thing that we will all agree on, and that is that the current situation, in terms of our labor legislation, is an unacceptable situation. The high levels of intimidation, the high levels of violence, etc., that mars our labor relations. And quite often these situations are not even between employer employees, but between employee organizations among themselves. And therefore, I think it is of utmost importance that we change what we have at present. We cannot continue with what we have. And therefore, we feel strongly that this clause, whereby the workers' intentions should be expressed through a ballot, must be reintroduced in this legislation. I support the idea that one would have liked to omit the part which says who voted in that election. But what we don't want, and I think that's the lesson that we've learned from previous legislation, we don't want to complicate matters where employers will then go to the courts to say, but listen, we are attacking or we are questioning your number of members, and therefore, because we believe you've got higher or lower numbers of members, we don't think that this ballot has been representative and that kind of thing, and that the majority of the members supported that. It's a general rule that if you don't vote, you cannot afterwards complain about the outcome of an election. And therefore, we can live with the option three, as a matter of fact, not only live, we support it as it stands in this piece of legislation as was presented to Parliament after the negotiations at NEDLAC. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van der Westhuizen. Honourable Nyakemba.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Good morning, colleagues.
Carol, I think the matter that we are debating here, this is a constitutional matter. It's enshrined in the Constitution. And it has been now dealt with in detail and as a matter of procedure in terms of the Labor Relations Act as we speak. Because the Constitution says workers have a right to strike. Employers have a right to recourse to strike. That's the Constitution. And now the Labor Relations Act, the principal act as we speak, go into details as to how that strike is supposed to happen. That's the Labor Relations Act. And I think the department has explained to say that in an event where there's a deadlock on an issue, then either party may go to CCMA. CCMA will try to mediate on the matter. In an event where parties that represent their constituencies, and as we are sitting here today, I agree with my colleagues that we have been voted by people to be here, but those people are not here. We are representing them. So that's why then at the CCMA, it will not be the workers. It will be their representatives who are going there to represent them. And after that, if the dispute is not resolved, a certificate will be issued. That says the matter is not resolved. And then if the other party wants to embark on a strike, we'll give notice to the other party. That we are giving you a notice that we will strike on this matter. Now, it can't go to that extent unless that it hasn't have the will of the people who are represented by that trade union that declared a dispute, because there can be no union without members. And members, you can't just be a member unless you're a worker. So those are workers who are talking through their trade union. The issue that has also been raised, separate in issues of wildcat strike and everything else, I mean, those are unprotected strikes, which are defined in terms of the current labor legislation. So we can't mix the two. We can't mix the two. A wildcat strike is a strike that is unprotected in terms of the Labor Relations Act. And there are ways which it has to be dealt with in terms of the principal act as we speak how to deal with that. So these are two different things, and ballot doesn't legitimize the strike. The strike has been legitimized by the fact that a dispute has been declared, CCMA has issued a certificate, then is about to will embark on the strike in terms of the outcome of the CCMA. That is the procedure. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Honorable Nyakembe. I just want to remind members that last week when we discussing this matter, there were issues that were raised, so that when we discuss this, we need to have that in mind. Among them was that the right to strike was fought for. It just didn't come in an intense democracy. It was actually fought for over during apartheid, and that there have been measures to curtail the right of workers to strike, and some of those were tactics that were used by business and government, and today people need to go to balloting before they go into a strike. So this was seen as another way of putting brakes on workers exercising their rights. The right to strike, it is in the Constitution, agreed. But I'll say again that there are certain unions who in the Constitution say before we go on any strike, there has to be balloting. But some unions do not have that clause in their constitution. So, and there's a feeling that let us not use an example of the constitution of one union to cover everybody. So I'll just say, as we discuss this, maybe let us also not forget what we read there last week. Are there any comments on this one from the members? Honorable Hanare, Honorable Mutau, Honorable Makugala Mashele, Honorable Nyakemba, in that order.
Honorable Chair, I think we have got to make this clear. The intention of this clause is not to take away the right to strike of any workers will remain having the right to strike. To me, the issue is, in the light of all these other activities, how do you legitimize that particular strike? The fact that the leadership of the union can declare dispute does not legitimize the strike. The fact that the majority of workers who are members of that particular union vote to go on strike legitimizes that strike. It's not an issue of representativity. It's an issue of where those workers make a decision or of whether they want to go on strike or not. And I want that to be understood. I support fully the right to strike by workers. No problem with it. But those workers must have the right to decide of whether they want to strike or not as a matter of procedure. Not only the certificate from the CCMA. That's really the issue I have. And I believe that the majority of workers should agree to go on strike for the strike to be seen to be legitimate. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Khanar.
Thank you, Chair. I think we need to be very, very clear about this, because sometimes when we discuss issues, we tend to deflect. This is not a discussion about whether workers have a right to strike or not. That's not in question. What we're discussing here is how we bring order, how we eliminate as much as possible intimidation, how we legitimize issues that have been agreed by people who have been given a free choice to agree on something. This is what it's about. It should never, ever be implied that it was about the right to strike. The right to strike is entrenched. We are saying, let's bring some order. We have had experience in 85. Certain things didn't work. We have a maximum number of strikes, illegitimate, but we need to make sure that we bring down the level of aggression, the level of intimidation, the level of violence, and we believe that balloting would be one of those things that can get a universal mandate from members, either to strike or not to strike. That's their right to do so.
Thanks, Honorable Mutau.
Chairperson, the fight before 1994 was essentially a fight about the right to vote, to ballot. Not only a fight about the right to strike. And what we are seeing is that in 1994, the democracy was rolled out in this country. Now what we're arguing for in this clause and further clauses is to bring democracy back to the workplace. And that is all that we're arguing for. What we're arguing for is for this government to be true to its original intentions, and that is to allow people to express their will through the ballot paper. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Van der Zijden. Honorable Makugala Mashele.
Thanks, Chairperson. You know, honorable members, let's not smell a rat where there isn't any. Members of a union elect their representatives to act on their behalf. We have mandate here in Parliament, members of our different political parties, we're elected to come here. But look at the situation where right now, before we actually go into legislation, we'd go out and ask all those that voted us to go out and vote again, to ask if we have to correct this clause or not. You know, as people who have, those people have entrusted us to come in here and act on their behalf, then we're not clear of our mandate. We go out and say they must still vote again if we have to amend this or not amend it. You know, I see a situation where you honorable members want us to act in that way. But we have said the notice to strike is sufficient enough for members to embark on a protected demonstration to vent out their grievances. But then to say that they still have to be subjected on an administrative procedure to go out and vote doesn't suffice. They're saying those members of the trade unions who have been elected by the workers themselves to say go and represent our interests at Bargaining Council, at CCMA, have, if they issue out a notice to strike, that suffices, that's enough for a strike action to take place. Thanks, Chairperson. That's just my submission. But I want to say here, yeah, honourable members are bitching about wanting to smell a rat where there isn't any. They want to say members who, workers who've elected their representatives don't have, they don't trust them enough to say that if they have deadlocked and they issue up a notice to strike, that means it's not a true reflection of the negotiations or the bargaining that have taken place.
I think we should leave the rat out of this one. Honorable Nyagembo, no rat, please.
Thank you, Jeffrey. No rat. You see, Jefferson, the discussion, the manner in which my colleagues who are for a ballot, the manner in which they are presenting the issue, is like to say, nothing will happen, everything that has to happen, there must be a ballot. To negotiate, there must be a ballot. Because a strike comes as a result of negotiations. Now, they don't say before negotiating that there must be a ballot. But they say after negotiations and then a dispute has been declared, there's no ballot before declaring a dispute. Then after the dispute has been declared, a certificate has been issued to say the matter is not resolved. That's when they say there must be a ballot. I mean, it's like everything to them, there must be a ballot. There must be a ballot. Suppose the trade unions exist as a result of the Constitution. And the Labor Relations Act went further to detail how those trade unions are supposed to exist. They must register with the Department of Labor. And there are requirements for a trade union to be a legitimate trade union. Now, everything then that union is going to do has already been legitimized by the fact that they have met all the requirements that are required in terms of the Labor Relations Act, to be a trade union. And one of those things is their constitution. Now, we can't sit here and rewrite the constitution of trade unions. We can't then say, because before 1994, the act then used to say, these are the things that the unions have to do without the union taking decisions on their own, on themselves. It can't be said. It can't be. And the issue of the word case and everything else, they have been there even during, before this LRA came into place. Unprotected strikes were there. They were called illegal strikes by them. Why then there were those in the old labor, in the old act? If then, that's because there was a ballot. So as a result, there were no unprotected industrial actions. That is not true. They were there even if there was ballot at that particular time. We can't, in a democracy, repeat what used to happen before, Jefferson. This Labor Relations Act came as a result of thorough negotiations and discussions between organized business, organized labor, government, and civil society. This is their will. This happened after we have been voted for. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the representative. Does anyone want to really fight for I make a ruling on this one in terms of how we're going to go forward. Now, I want to remember that it's clear that we are divided on this issue. That there's a strong feeling that balloting needs to... And that there are those of the numbers here who feel that if you insist on balloting, you're actually taking the right of workers to strike. So, and I don't see any way where we could reconcile these two. So, I therefore suggest that we divide the house and vote on this matter, if it makes a lot of sense to all of us here. Yeah. Honorable Khanare wants to summarize it differently. There's another view that I left out.
No, there are three views. The ANC says option one, take option one. The hope take of option point two of option two, and the DA believes that the clause must be left as is. So we are not, it's not only two views, there are three views.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm here to see you as many as right. Oh, yeah, it's been corrected. Honorable Mutawi, you have to
up. Oh, no. I'm done.
I think what we're going to do is we'll vote in principle, because then after that the process will be in, and then we can vote on this matter in the next meeting next week Tuesday, because they need to rework the, so that when we do the voting, the clause is in black and white, whatever, so that we know what we're voting for. But for now, we're just checking. We're voting in principle, let me say that. If it makes a lot of sense to members.
It makes a lot of sense. You reduce the number of options. That's what we need.
Is there anything to...
Good,
okay, on procedural matters. Honorable Councilmember Moshe.
Chairperson, I want the law advisors to advise here. Because I don't know, why do we have to have all these options when we go on a vote, yet in a majority here we are actually saying what should be reflected on the bill is the clause which, I mean, it should be out. It means when the bill comes, it will not have that clause anymore. So it's just a procedure where they can advise us. Because if we, in our majority, are saying the clause should be rejected outright, it should not be there. It means when the bill comes in, when we are voting on the bill, it would not have that clause. It will just have maybe something that will say that the clause was to reject or something. But they can advise on how it should be. It's just me being very inquisitive and wanting to know why should we put all these other clauses when it comes to us.
No, thanks. Let's get the view of the members before we get advice. So that Honorable Mutam.
Chair, I think the Honorable Member is making a very interesting assumption. The member assumes that all her colleagues will vote for option one.
All your colleagues will vote
against it. Anything is possible. Honorable Okwela Mashalagi.
Okay, Chairperson, that assumption can be verified by just a show of hands for us who are for the total rejection. So we've got three views, and they are known, they are public. The ANC is calling for a total rejection of this clause. COPE says option, and they are only one. And DA, which has only two members, is also calling another option, meaning that we, in our majority, will have the clause rejected and it will not appear on the bill, you know. So our assumptions are public knowledge for consumption. And
we are all entitled to own assumptions about issues, but here we are going to vote. It doesn't matter what. I think let's do this way. We'll option one, those who vote for the rejection of option one, and then option two and option three, and then we are done, we move forward. Is there anyone who got a contrary view to that? The legal team, what do you advise?
Particularly looking at how we process the ball going forward, we take in decisions in principle, but I think that we are at a phase now in the ball where the votes come all serious. They are not issues which can go either way. They are positions on which there clearly a majority view versus a minority view being expressed. And I think that perhaps on this particular clause, that if a final vote is taken, notwithstanding the fact that other clauses have not been finally voted upon, when we do get clause by clause, the only effect would then be that clause 6 is finally voted on today, and it will then just be recorded in the next meeting that a vote has already happened on clause 6, notwithstanding final vote on all the other clauses. Thank you, Chair.
I think that's from relief. So if one of us wants us to vote, even on clause 6 going down, we can still do that.
You see, Chair, the fact is if we've taken a final vote today on clause 6, it's a final vote.
Yes.
That's perhaps the downside of changing your mind between today and next week when there is final vote on the final bill. So this is why we said all along, if we have decisions in principle, it still gives leeway to change until the final vote on the bill takes place.
But we're taking an in principle vote. Honorable Khanar.
If we are going to vote on this bill, the whole bill, next week, what is so urgent that on this particular clause we must vote today? To me, is that it will be more intelligent to vote next week, so that so that we can vote for the whole bill, so that any member can have a right to change their mind.
Listen to the legal team. Before you consult our own legal team, our push lawyer, let's listen to the real lawyer.
Thank you. while that view does hold, I'd also like to ask the chairperson and members to appreciate that when the drafting team, the State Law Advisory Department and Parliament's legal team, leave this meeting today, we have background work that needs to be done. We have to prepare prints through CLEDA, our printing agency, so that when we meet next week, that all those proofs are ready. Now, if we come to the meeting next week with the options as they currently are on page 3 of the A-list, it means that post next week's meeting, we don't have a final B-bill. We have B-bill with options, and then the members that have the final version of the bill before them, which is practicing Parliament. We have to have another meeting on Tuesday to have the final B-bill. So that's the effect of the term a little bit.
I don't think, Honourable Member, I don't want to rush a big year with it. Honourable Madam, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Okay. Honourable McRoyal,
Madam. Thanks, Chairperson. I'm saying we need to start cleaning up so that when we come here, we are focused. If we are saying the clause needs to be rejected, it means when we come there, if we want a bill which does not have the clause in it, you know, it's we don't want it to be having this option and this option. So my take on this one is because we in our majority are saying the clause needs to be rejected. We've just three dissenting views, so we should go ahead and say when the bill comes up, this section needs to be cleaned up. It should not reflect on the draft bill. Is anyone? Am I protected in this meeting? I'm just airing my view. Yeah. Yeah. Then not
you
anymore.
You are protected. You are protected.
Thanks, Professor. I mean, my take would be that let's clean it up. When it comes back, it should not be having this clause, Chairperson. That's my submission.
Honourable members, we're going to vote. There are three items. Option one. Let's do voting for option one. That clause rejected. Who shall be that count? 7, thank you. Option two. Yeah, 2 foot, yeah.
Okay,
sure. Phase one, so this. And then class three. Option three, I meant to say. And then two. Yeah, two. It's clear that option one is the way to go. So now, can we move on?
Chairperson, please note that we are therefore still stand where Cabinet supported it last year. Thank you. When Cabinet signed up on this, we share that view. Thank you.
Advocate Gordon.
Thank you, Chair. Just to highlight that on the basis that Clause 6 is rejected, Clause 8 and Clause 20 will have a consequential effect of that vote, as we decided last week. So then just to confirm that Clause 8 would similarly fall in the rejected category, along with Clause 20. Thank you, Chair. And I think that just brings us to Clause 43 and 44 on the 10-year women's section. Thanks, Chair. Yeah. So we have option one was 7 votes, option two was 1, and option three was 2 votes. So we'll proceed to having clause 6 rejected in the proposed A, the A list of proposed by the committee. Chair, and then we proceed to clause 8 years. Currently, the proposed A list on page 6 from 9-11, we've omitted paragraph B, but clause A consists of two paragraphs, paragraph A and B.
So paragraph A will be rejected as a result of the rejection of Clause 6. So because paragraph B was already rejected in the proposals and paragraph A is rejected now as a result of a consequential amendment to Clause 6. So therefore the whole Clause 8 is rejected.
The whole of Clause
8. Sorry? Then we'll have clause 20. Clause 20 is linked to clause 6. Yeah. An amendment to clause 20 will depend on an amendment to clause 6. So because 6 is rejected, so there won't be any amendment in that sense. So check, can I just request a moment quickly? With clause 8, clause B is rejected, paragraph E of clause 8 is rejected as per the proposed ALIS. The other part A is rejected as a result of rejection of clause 6, but clause 8 has paragraph C by the deletion of subsection 9. So that paragraph C will still stay in clause 8. Yes, C will stay, The next one is clause 43. I just want to confirm the time period that has been agreed, but in clause 43 on page 21 of the line 4. On page 21 of the line 4. There's a time period there. Paragraph C. Page 21 of the line 4. To add the following paragraph. For the purposes of a person contemplating in subsection 1, and the services will procured for provide to a client prior to commencement of the Labour Relations Amendment Act 2013, paragraph A takes effect 6 months after the date of the commencement of section 43 of the State Act. Thank you. Just to clarify, I think that it's a bit back to front. Last week the discussion was on clause 44. That is where the 6 month issue starts, the clause 44. And the decision in clause 44 will have a consequential effect even in 43. But we have to start at 44, and whatever is taken in 44 will then spiral back to 43. So I don't think we can start at 43. We have to start at 44, and then it will have an effect 43. Thank you. Thank you. So clause 44 on page 21, which is, we start page 21. Clause 44 starts from line 25, so we'll see in line 31. In line 31, to omit 6 and to substitute XX or question mark. Okay. So the committee needs to decide on what to substitute 6 with, whether it will stay the same or to substitute with the different amount.
Can I give over to honorable member to engage on this matter? If there
Thank you. Chairperson, I think we have said before that there's no doubt in our mind that temporary employment service providers have in the past been used by
employers to circumvent certain good labor practices. And therefore we shared the concern of those that said that something must be done about the current situation in South Africa regarding temporary employment services. And therefore we also welcomed the regulation of such services to bring it back into line with what was originally the intention of those advertising that they offer temporary employment services. We, however, have taken note last week of a proposal to amend this specific clause to a period not exceeding 0 months, which firstly, I think we must say to one another, then we must have a complete rewrite of the section. Because let's not hit around the bush. It then means that we do not want to see this function in the South African labor market. We want nothing more than just placement agencies, because that is what it will then turn into. And placement agencies is dealt with under a different piece of legislation, which is also on its way to be debated here in this committee. I think what is important is that we must say to each other, the economy is now a global economy. South Africa is no longer cut off from the rest of the world. We must compete with the rest of the world. And to compete with the rest of the world, it also means that we are being ranked in terms of our practices with international practice. And you know that in terms of the World Economic Forum's latest report, that's the 2012 report, our lack of labor flexibility is something which has been very clear in our low ranking. I think we are in the number 140th position of 144 countries that were ranked according to that list. Now what we are going to achieve is that our labor market flexibility will be diminished even further. And I think the question what we need to say to each other, do we need flexibility or don't we need flexibility? Now, our argument is that the more flexible your labor regime is, the higher your chances of employment and of reducing unemployment. So we are particularly concerned that any further amendment to curb this practice will lead to higher levels of unemployment, which to our mind, at this point in time, is the biggest pressing problem and the biggest risk for our country. We seriously believe that the high unemployment figures, especially amongst young people, carries social risks for South Africa, of which we have not yet seen the full consequences. So, Chairperson, we therefore want to ask those who last week proposed that this 6 month period be changed to 0 months, A, to reconsider their position, but also secondly, if they don't want to reconsider that position, that they then refer this piece of the legislation back so that it can be rewritten. Because to have legislation, sections upon sections, dealing with something which then effectively restricted to zero, is it makes for sloppy legislation, to say the least. But the far bigger problem, as I've said and I'm reiterating, is the damaging effect that this will have on unemployment in our country. So we really therefore call on those who supported it last week to reconsider their position. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van der Westhuizen. Okay, Honourable, but I will go hand up.
Yes, my hand is up.
Oh, all right.
Chair, I just want to make a point that I made during the State of the Nation address, and post that is with what is happening currently. The numbers are bad, very bad. We currently have a labor broking industry that caters for about 1 million employees, and the knock-on effect is probably that these people support another 1 million or 2 million other people. I made the point that if we pass any legislation that would have the effect of any labor broking, we would be committing a monumental blunder. But I also believe if that is the effect, that law will not stand up to constitutional scrutiny. So we need to be very, very careful. And the appeal we made last week to our colleagues is that we need to recognize that the world of work has changed. Many, many, many more people are in temporary employment because they want to be in temporary employment. There's an article published in the Business Day about labor broking, and they give an example of a young woman, young man, black, green, yellow, who works as a waitron. This person works, she just waits on tables, or he waits on tables, and these stints or these jobs are organized by labor broking firms. If you think about it logically, this person will never be able to work if we pass this law. They would have their first job and that would be it. Now, are we prepared to see lots and lots of South Africans kicked out of work because we pass a bad law? Because this will be a bad law if we do pass it. I don't think we want to do that. I don't think that any one of us here would want to see a South African out of a job. So what we appealed for last week, which we are doing now, is to make sure that if there are rotten apples in the pocket, in the labor broking pocket, we should actually get rid of them. That's why we need to regulate and make sure that we have labor inspectors who make sure that the bad people are arrested, prosecuted, and punished. That's our job. But we cannot do something that will, in our view, have the effect of shutting down the whole industry. That would, in my view, be a bad, bad thing to make. I think, Chair, we appeal to our colleagues to look at this thing and think about something which is actually quite ironic. That we as the official opposition are sitting in this committee today defending what is relatively the position of the Department of Labor. And the members of the ministry, the members of the party of the minister are actually saying, no, we think this is bad. It's quite ironic as I reflected on this over the weekend that this is the situation. But I believe we need to really, really apply our minds diligently to this thing. Make sure that we do what everybody is crying out for, facilitate employment opportunities, facilitate employment and permanent employment, but also remember that many, many, many more people are in temporary employment and somebody has to make sure that they get that employment. Thank you.
Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that one of the things that we shouldn't forget is that the reason why this is such a controversial clause is because the law of labor brokers are fundamentally exploiting the workers in South Africa. If they hadn't been exploiting people for this time that they've been in existence, then we wouldn't be so, you know, this wouldn't be such a controversial clause. Fundamentally, the opposition might be here defending the ministry's position. I'm here defending the people's position. So, I mean, you know, I think that's important to remember. I think that we should also look at the fact, the example that was used of the waitress or waitron, that are we assuming that if labor brokers are bad or not bad, if their period comes, a 0 month period, that the restaurant will close down and that there won't be a demand. I think that we should always remember that regardless of how people are employed in their jobs, there will always be a demand for labor. And we can't say that's just going to disappear. We're going to make the 0 months and then there's going to be no demand for labor anymore. So I think that argument is a little short-sighted. Yes, we should discuss this more. We should definitely come up with a way, and we shouldn't be emotional about this. But definitely, we should bear in mind that we are here changing legislation that should, at the end of it, not be about the people that make profit, but should be about the workers on the ground. The working class, the poor of South Africa, are relying on this committee to not make legislation that exploits them. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think this is not
a new section that is proposed in the Principal Act. We are trying to amend Section 198 that reflects in the Principal Act. Section 198 that makes reference to temporary employment services. I think we're talking about something that is in the Act as we speak. It's not something new, but we're saying, how do we make it meaningful by amending it? I think that's the issue, sir. Because it's like last week, Tuesday, the issue of, Wednesday, last week, yes, the issue of labor brokers and all. In the current Principal Act, there's no labor broker, and it is not even defined in the current Principal Act. So I'm surprised now, Honorable Father Bastenzen, where does he take that? And even if you look at the bill that is in front of us, it is not mentioned the issue of the labor broker. What is reflecting is the temporary employment service, which is in terms of Section 198 of the Principal Act. So today, I thought it's important that I think the what the bill seeks to do, what is it that must be done in order there's no exploitation of the current Section 198 in the Principal Act? Because you can't have a temporary employment indefinite. That's the issue at hand here. You can't have it. Once you say temporary, that means it's something that is going to come to an end. And it can't continue. Because once it continues, then it's something else. It's no longer temporary now. Now, we can't have permanent temporary. If the argument that was advanced earlier is seeking to put it that way. So, the point I'm raising here, Chairperson, is that the principle here is, one, I think we all understand that there will be positions that will be of a temporal nature. And you can't do that away. It will be there. I'm not going to argue on the next clause that we're coming to, but I'm still on this one. The point I'm trying to do, I'm trying to explain this. And does it say that do not to believe, to be left without a clarified? Minister Oliphant, who is Minister of Labour, she is part of the executive. There are three branches of the state. It's the executive, it's the legislature, and judiciary. So therefore, we are doing our responsibility as the legislature here. So I got the point. So the point I'm raising here is that let us argue now. Let us argue in saying, with the current Section 198 of the Principal Act, which reflects temporary employment, how do we rearrange that? Because we can't just have a temporary employment that is indefinite. That's the point here, which I want us to ask you, Sir President. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Yajima. Honorable Hanare. Honorable Matumule, Honorable Matawi, you are noted.
Let me start by praising the ANC members of this committee. For the first time, they are not praising us of the minister, opposed to something which has been placed in front of us by the minister. The issue of this clause. Okay. I have got to agree with Ms. Honorable Nyegema. The issue here should be, how do we make sure that people are not placed in jobs and become permanently temporary. That's what the legislation needs to address. But you cannot address that by saying there should be no zero temporary services. No, no, no. When you say zero temporary, there is no temporary service at all. You have prohibited it completely. And or to use honorable fundamental, you have banned it. But what I think we have to do with this law is to say, how do we try to deal with the issue of super exploitation in such a way that these workers don't get exploited, even if they are placed by temporary employment. To make a legislation which says, once they are placed in a job, they must be treated the same as any other employees who are doing the same job in that particular company. That would be my first point. That's why I was going to suggest that if you look under the statute of 198A, clause 5, where it says an employee deemed to be an employee of the tribe in terms of subsection 3B, I prefer that it should be 3A and 3B. Must be treated on the whole, not less favorably than an employee of the client perform the same or similar work unless there is a justifiable reason for different treatment. That would be my first proposal, that in that way, you make sure that once these people are given a job, on a temporary basis, in terms of temporary employment services, but they will not be treated differently in terms of their benefits and salaries. Less than workers who are in that particular place, which to me is important. But the second point is that we cannot force people to have vacancies when there are no vacancies. But once you discover that at a particular point this vacancy do exist, then they do need for this person to be employed by the temporary employment service. Then that means they must be employed. That's why I'm going to say the 198-1A. We should say, let's argue between 3 months and 6 months. That would be my argument. Because once I'm sure that that particular vacancy, that particular person must be made permanent. But let's allow temporary employment services to place the person at work. And once we discover, the period we put is that once we discover that vacancy exists, we have got to do with it. But the issue also is that I'm talking about temporary employment services. I've never seen any labor broker in this bill. That's why I'm saying temporary employment services. My view is that we must find another clause which addresses the issue of saying if a person is employed, we maybe put 3 months or 6 months, whatever we do. But employers make sure that you work, if you say 3 months, and then you work 2.5 months. And then they remove you and pay another person. We should actually address that to say, once that happens, it must be something prohibited, and it should be something we can deal with, that the worker who has been removed must have the recourse to find that they have been unfairly dismissed, if that's the case. I don't have the legal weight, but I'm sure the legal people understand what I want to say. What was wrong? Oh, it's addressed. So, very good. You see, the lawyers are on engineers.
Yeah,
our
bushwa. So you've got a bushwa you can consult next year.
Honorable, but you understand what I want to say.
No, I
got
you loud and clear. Honorable Mr.
Rumul. Chair, I was not part of the discussion of the previous forensics given. I've been so quiet since I arrived in this meeting, but I need to caution everybody now. Because I was listening very sharply. Look, for me it doesn't matter who says what. You can persuade me otherwise, but I'm not convinced. Because you see, in the South African economy, there is a deliberate inherent or brutal exploitation of vulnerable workers. In this economy, unless you were born somewhere else, but in this economy there is deliberate inherent or brutalization of workers. Where I am now, I don't know where you are. But I'm here. Unless we begin to persuade each other to the effect that what we are intending to do in this bill is to try and do our best to protect vulnerable workers in the mines, in the farms. And you cannot leave this economy unchanged for how long? I mean, in this country, it doesn't matter how long you have been in your job. You continue to remain poor. It doesn't matter how long you work in this country. You continue, you earn a living, but you continue to be poor. Because this inherent exploitation, brutal one, of vulnerable workers. That's my argument.
Could you switch off, Honorable Mokwele? Thank you very much. Honorable Mokwele, Michelle, and then I'll give over to you. Mutau, I just end up coming this one. Final Wednesday, then come in this one. Honorable Mokwele, Michelle, Shelley.
Chairperson, you know, I look at a situation where we are trying to correct the ills of the past exploitation by this triangular labor system where person A, who is the employer, would have a work at their plant or their place of work to be done. And then person C will go and so far force labor and place people in the workplace of person A. And the remuneration part of it goes from person A to person C. And it is at the mercy of this person to give whatever remuneration they see fit to this person that has been placed. If we can find a situation where we are going to craft this legislation to actually allow that a person who's put in place at a workplace gets direct remuneration from the employer, it will cut all these administrative and exploitative processes that have mushroomed and arrived in our labor market. Because if we are still going to say, yes, there will be a temporary employment, but if I am placed at a temporary employment and I receive my remuneration direct from my employer, you know, it will cut all these exploitative processes in between. Yeah, we do not want to put all temporary employment agencies under one umbrella and say they exploit workers, they don't operate above board. But we have said, we all have said, we have seen how easy it can be for the people who place people in employment to actually exploit them by not giving them what is due to them. So my proposal in saying, in moving forward, and saying we don't even have to argue between the 0, 3 months or 2 weeks or 6 months, but if we can find a way that would direct the remuneration from the person that is the employer and the employee, and let the temporary employment agency get in their administrative work for placing administrative dues for placing the person in employment and leave. That's my submission, Chair, while we are still deliberating on this issue, on this matter.
May, okay, Honourable Madam, I'm still on my way coming up.
Just want to clear a couple of things. We are not defending an open-ended clause here. The clause before us talks for 6 months. That's what we're defending. The other issue that is very, very important, the example I gave was not of a waitress working in a restaurant, but of a waitron who does these jobs, who fled from one place to the other. One day, today she said X, tomorrow she said Y, the next day she said D, she said. Not in a restaurant, it's not a permanent thing. I thought it was a very good example to show you what a labor broking, a good labor broking company can do for someone like that, who would have to stand at the street corner every day and say, I want to go and work where there is a function. Like tonight, there's going to be a function here. Those people who are going to be in that function are permanent employees, probably. So that's just one thing I wanted to clarify. The point I want to make is this. We have to recognize something very simple in this country. And my colleague alluded to it earlier on when he talked about the perception that we are very rigidly regulated here. We are arguing for regulation of labor broking, and that's what everybody calls it in the country. Sure, temporary employment services, that's fine, but we know what we're talking about. We are arguing for regulation here because we believe it's the lesser of two evils. Either you have an industry that's regulated or it's not. We're doing it in spite of ourselves. As an organization, we believe that our labor environment is over-regulated, but we still believe this is necessary to do so. I want us to understand one thing. Every law that we pass protecting the vulnerable workers, and we all want to do that, is a law that we pass that increases the number of even more vulnerable jobless people. It's a hurdle. If I put up a hurdle to say you're going to have to jump this high and I protect you, when you're inside, it means that the next guy who's coming on has got to jump even higher to get in. So we need to be cognizant of this fact, that laws, much as they are necessary, tend to keep certain people in and keep certain people out. And now we are at the point where we have talk of insiders, these are people with jobs, and outsiders, these are people without jobs. And somebody has to look after them, because after all, they are part of this community. So again, we appeal that we have a piece of legislation here which says, let's give this industry a six-month window period, and if in 6 months this labor broker doesn't know whether they have to employ this person permanently or not, then they've got to give reasons why and stuff like that. But indeed, all the other terms, the conditions and stuff like that are covered by the basic conditions of employment. People have got to be treated more or less the same and stuff like that during the window. So I just wanted to clear those things. We're not arguing for an open-ended bill here. We're arguing for the bill that's before us, and we want to make sure that we understand where we're going. Thank you very much.
Let's not forget the honorable members when we engage that just some 3 weeks ago, a month ago, we ratified some of the Geneva Conventions. We are operating in a global world, and we are somehow bound in one or the other by some of the agreements and conventions that we sign, and we need to remain true to those. And among the conventions where we were very active as this parliament and the Department of Labor was on equal work for same work of equal value. So this is at the center of the problem that we raised last week when we were talking about labor brokerage or temporary employment services. So as we discussed, let's not forget some of the convention that we have just ratified now and in the past. Who is next on the Honorable Nyagema, and then I'll have Honorable Helen Lang, and then the Honorable Maramel after that. In that order.
Thank you, Sir President. I think that thinking from what Honorable Mankubela Marcel raised in terms of whether is it possible to tighten the amendment that we are debating currently. Because I think the point that she is raising is that in any event, irrespective of 0 or 3 or 6 months now, what will be the administration relationship between the temporary employment service and the client? How do we guard against that? Is there a possibility of having some kind of a wedding? Because these subsections under this chapter, some of them, they are in a way a standalone from the other. I'm raising this because of the point that was raised by Honorable Khadari earlier, and that the reference that is made in terms of subsection 4 of the amendment, which is making reference to subsection 5B, his argument was that it must not necessarily be 5B alone. It must be 3A and B in dealing with subsection 4 of the bill. So the point I'm raising, Mr. President, is that once the word might be thinking of a period of transition in relation to this, but at the same time, if it is possible, we must also try to tie up some kind of administration in order that there must be no loophole of super exploitation of these people who are placed by temporary employment service. I happen to raise that, share that in our mind, let that also be something that we discuss. Thank you.
And again, as we discuss, we need to reflect on the basic conditions of employment, because there are some laws that should be able to give us direction on where to go. May I give over to Honourable Lyne? Honourable Lyne.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I was partly covered by the Honourable Member, but mine would still be in terms of the transition. This Act must be very clear what is expected from the employer or the placement agency and what is the step going forward. So that the employee should not be the one that is going to be confused in this whole process. Meaning that now that it's more likely for a placement agency to get a connection with the worker than the work of the employee itself. So I think we must really look at this issue of the transition. How are we going to ensure that in terms of, it might be 0 months, 3 months, 6 months, but still it will end up that the exploitation will be there.
Thanks, Honourable Lyne. Honourable Manamela.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think the first thing is that we agree with certain things. We agree basically that the presence of labor brokers in, or rather of temporary employment service providers brought about super exploitation, and also brought about the fact that some of the providers of temporary employment stretched the labor laws to a particular extent, and some of them were actually abusive to workers. I think that we agree on that. I think we also need to deal with the notion that labor brokers came within the labor market just because there is high unemployment. Because that's not the case. Labor brokers did not come into the labor market in the interest of the workers. That's not the case. Because to try and argue that labor brokers are within the labor market precisely because of a high unemployment rate is basically, and then try and pin that on its head and suggest that once you regulate or completely do away with labor broking, therefore you will consequently deal with unemployment. I think that that's not the case. Yesterday, and I think even over the weekend, there has been this attempt, not only by labor brokers, but by some proponents of labor brokers, to try and fill each and every inch of the media space, both electronic and print, to suggest that over the last month and also over the last quarter, labor brokers have been responsible for employment. And the intention being to put a pressure, obviously, on this committee. And not going to budge on that pressure. We do not only represent the interests of labor brokers, but we represent the interests of every South African.
And I'm sure that that emphasis has also been made by all the political parties that are represented in here. But what we also agree on is that we need to deal with the exploitative nature of labour broking. There is no one who says that we should do away with temporary employment. There is no one who, at least from the ANC, who is opposed to people being employed on a temporary basis or on a short-term basis, or also on a agreed fixed term. There's no one who is opposed to all of those, and we believe that the proposals in their current as they stand seek to further protect workers who are on a fixed term, short term, or temporary basis. And we basically applaud that, and we do not want that section of the act to move away. But I think what is interesting, Chair, from today's discussion is that in as much as we are prepared to do away with all this, the notion of super exploitation, the protection of workers' rights and all of that, I think what is also a bit certain is that there seem to be an intention to engage on what the period should be between 0 and 6 months, but also there seems to also be an intention to safeguard particularly the transitional phase, so that workers who are in full-time employment by labour broking, their interests are taken care of, and that their transfer from the labour broking company to the employer, that we really have to look at that. And finally, there seems to be this untruth that is repeated, so that it gains ground. And this untruth is that there is over-regulation in the South African labour market. And I think that we have to deal with that, because part of the problems which we have seen, the labor disputes, the strike, and all of that, are a reflection of the fact that either the laws do not go to the extent which they should in protecting the rights of workers, or that there are employers who are prepared to ignore the law. And this is not for any other reason, but for purposes of making sure that businesses are profitable. Yes, good enough, but the profitability of businesses in any way would come at the expense of workers, would come or would have an effect on the wages of workers, and that's what we've seen. And that the terrain has been on... forget about all the other laws which have been put into place in order to protect the rights of workers. But the major cause of labor unrest in our country has been mainly on the question of wages. Workers hardly go out on strike because of the safety conditions in workplaces and all of that. So the main battle has been on the question of wages. And to therefore suggest that part of the crisis in our labour market is as a result of the rigidity or lack of flexibility of our labour laws, I think that is actually untrue, and that we really need to deal with this. And then the other untruth which is being repeated is that if we overregulate or if we completely do away with labour brokers, therefore jobs will be lost. As long as certain services need to be provided in our economy, there will always be a threat. Because the issue at hand here is the definition of who is the employer. It is not about whether someone should be employed or not, but it is about who the employee of that person is. Companies use labor broking in order to address certain costs. Labor brokers are into this business in order to hire workers, and some of them even take a fee from what is due to those workers in the form of wages. So that is what is at issue.
the issue of jobs has been thrown into the whole equation and into the whole mix, so that members should then be able to draw emotions on an issue that is completely unrelated. Thanks.
Other members, I think we should take a 15-minute tea break and then reconvene after that. Let's reconvene after 15 minutes. That's like us there, according to mine. honourable members, let's honourable Khanare. Yes. We are reconvening now to again to look at section 40. Clause 44 and its other subsection. And this engagement will have implications again on clause 43 and other sections. So I'll give over to Honorable Williams to your hand is up. You seem itching to speak. Honorable Williams, and I've seen the hand of Honorable Van der Leesdeisen and this Honorable Advocate Arnold. Yeah, in that order for now. Over to you, Honorable William.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, this clause 44, section 198AA, we've been discussing this fundamentally since we started with this legislation. Fundamentally, we're trying to balance between employment and the quality of the employment that people get. So in other words, then, compromises have to be made, and we do realize that. So I would propose that that section that we proposed last week, that was going to be 0 months, and that the minister or the proposal from the legislation was 6 months, I'd like to propose that section 198AA will read for a period not exceeding 3 months. Thank you, Chairperson.
There's a suggestion. Any second now? I think we should start there first and see if we have a discussion.
I want to put on record that I support the proposal, therefore I second. The 3 months.
The proposal is seconded. Honourable Van der Leesdeisen.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I first express my sincerest gratitude to those that have now made this amendment to what was proposed last week. I know it has been the result of intense internal debate, and I'm extremely grateful that you have put thousands of South Africa's interests who would have been affected by zero before other interests that you may have. May I just say, Chairperson, when we consider this amendment, I want to return to some of the so-called untruths that were spoken about earlier today. The first one is the issue of the over-regulation. It's not us that's saying that. It's our ranking, our very low ranking in terms of the labor flexibility, in terms of world rankings. The other one is also our premise that even this is going to lose, to lead to a number of jobs being lost. It's based not on something which we've thumbsucked, but it is based on a risk impact assessment report that was done on the original draft of this legislation, and the 6 months was already a way to try and address the severity of the original proposals. But then, Chairperson, you also ask that we keep in mind international treaties, equal work for equal pay for equal work, and I want to refer you to
section 34198A 2-5, and that is exactly why we believe this is a good piece of legislation, where it says an employee deemed to be an employee of the client in terms of subsection 3B must be treated on the whole not less favorably than an employee of the client performing the same or similar work, unless there is a justifiable reason for different treatment. So we really believe that many of your concerns have been addressed by the proposals in front of us. We, as you know, have already originally asked for a 12-month period. We were happy to abide by the 6 months, but we are extremely grateful that at least the zero has now been changed to a proposal of 3 months. Thank you.
Thank Honorable Funder for this. Honorable Waddell.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. The world teaches us something that when you engage in discourse with anybody and they make a concession, you've got to recognize that, and I want to recognize the concession made by the honorable members here. My concern is still practicality. What informs the 3 months? Because I know that a lot of work and a lot of thought has gone into the 6 months. And clearly, we would like to make a concession, but then we've got to make sure that that concession will deliver the goods that we really want to be delivered. And I'm not sure that I am clear in my own mind that purely from a practical perspective, how this 3 months will impact on the changes that is in effect on the amendment bill. So I would hope that maybe we could get some insight as to, you know, how the 3 months will feature vis-a-vis the 6 months, which we believe is actually a very good time frame.
Thanks, Honorable Madal. Honorable Nyagamba.
Thank you very much, Shabadu. The 3 months, which I think is equivalent to 90 days. Because if you look at the processes, at whether it's CCMA or bargaining councils, the same law, the fiscal law, referred to any conciliation that has to be done within 30 days. And then arbitration within 90 days. The issue here, Chairperson, is about between the temporary employment service and the client. And the issue about this is identification as to whether the position that I am placed in, is it a permanent or a temporary position in its nature. This amendment is trying to draw a distinction between those two. So now that makes me to have a question as to if then Honorable Mudau and his colleague, initially it was 12 months and then they were defending the 6 months, same question will apply as to what informed them of that 12 months. But I think I've tried, Chairperson, to say this is a period of making sure as to whether this is a permanent position or it's a temporary position. That's why this section is talks to temporary employment service. So there's no other way. And I think that clarifies the point which it is not clear to those in some of us suggesting that the traditional period that it is 3 months. Thank you, Sharazum.
Thank you, Honorable
Gentleman. I was consulting my lawyer there, my other lawyer.
Honorable, oh, let me give Albert. Honorable Albert and then Honorable Maname.
Thank you, Chair. Our position has always been that this should have been a strict and rigid rule regarding that actually applies to all of industry. It should have been a rule that should have been industry-based. Every industry is quite unique, and some industries, labor workers work efficiently without any problems, and people don't really complain, and then you find other industries where there are huge problems. So that should have been the focus, but that being said, there's no one rule that's been created that's going to cover all industries in South Africa. And now a proposal of 3 months has been placed on the table. I guess which one is thankful that it's not 0 months. But one is to think about industries which have people that come and go a lot. And I can only perhaps look at the quite glamorous industry of film and television in South Africa, which is a growing industry. Broadcasting is a growing industry in South Africa. And people come and go there a lot. And those people are employed by labor brokers. An actor or actress, a crew member, radio personality, all these people are employed by virtue of labor brokers. They would have no recourse, anybody else, if there were no labor brokers in those industries. Now, you might get a Hollywood film comes here, you have one of these mega blockbusters that's going to be made in South Africa, and the production might run into 6 months. It's quite possible. Sometimes they run even a year or longer, depending on what happens on set. And now suddenly, after 3 months, all of those people must be regarded as permanent employees. Some of them don't want to be permanent employees, but that's the nature of the industry as well. Some of them want to be freelancers. So from our point of view, we would still like to go for the maximum available, which is 6 months. Ideally, a year would have been proper. And I think what we must do going forward is, if we have regard to the example of Namibia, where the employment numbers have not picked up between the time that labor brokers were actually banned in that country, we must also continually keep monitoring this system and see whether we do have an uptick of employment due to the fact that labor brokers have their right to employ or outsource have been diminished to 3 months. And we need to keep monitoring that. If it doesn't work, Chairperson, what we need to do in the country, we need to be pragmatic and not ideological. If it doesn't work, we must change it to more months or change the rule completely. Perhaps look at industry-specific regulation. I'm quite sure that industry regulation would be quite an act in the mining sector, given our problems there. And the exploitation that is taking place there, I do admit that, but not necessarily in all industries, and we must be flexible in that regard. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Albert. Honorable Manler. You don't have anything?
Thanks,
Look, the Honorable Farah Vatazan said earlier on that they are supporting the proposal from the minister. I think they're doing a very bad job in supporting the minister. I'm not sure she would be very happy with the kind of support that they will be giving her because of the arguments that they are presenting in support of what is supposedly a proposal from the minister. Because I'm sure she wouldn't agree with some of the justification on the period that the DA is supporting. But I think just to also emphasize that we are legislators. We are a separate entity from the executive. And I think that we need to retain that right to engage, to differ, whether be it with the minister or amongst each other. And I think where there is a possibility for us to agree, let's use that possibility and opportunity. In terms of the proposal, if you look at the 198A26, basically covers the concern by Honorable Albert in relation to the regulation of which industries
this will apply. So I don't think that it is a concern. But also we need to make a distinction between what is a fixed contract between an employer and an employee, and also a distinction with a short-term employment and long-term employment. We are not under the illusion that those do not exist. We are aware that there is a set of for a film, and a film cannot be recorded forever. We are also aware that there is a function tonight in Parliament, and the Parliament does not have parliamentary debates forever, and that there is provision for that, in that the employer is the service provider who provides the service. And what we want, because that employer provides services not only to Parliament but to all other clients that they may have, what we do not want is a situation where in the events a company or the service provider decides to willy-nilly fire and hire the workers that they use. And I think that to suggest that there are people who like this thing, that there's no uncertainty, that tomorrow they may not have a job where yesterday they were working, it's actually ridiculous. I don't think that there's anybody who enjoys the fact that their employment and their relationship with their employer flexible, or that they would want to be hopping from one job into another, particularly as it relates to vulnerable workers. Let's not even try and repeat that untruth that there are people who are basically doing this thing of being from one job. There are obviously workers, actors, musicians, soccer players who are not happy with a particular team they are playing for, a film they are performing for, and they want to be involved in a new employment relationship. That we cannot fight. And in most instances, the power relations are different between a relationship between a farmer and a farm owner. You see, a domestic worker and the owner of, their employer, a miner and the mine owner. So those power relations are different. Jose Mourinho can choose to leave Real Madrid and go to Chelsea. The power relations are different as compared to a member of the NUM in Marikana who has no choice but to subject themselves to the dictate of of that worker. The other point is that a regulatory impact assessment has been made. Yes, we agree on that. And that is why these changes, and regulatory impact assessment was made on the basis of different conditions and different provisions and proposals at the time. And all of those, in our view, have been taken into consideration. So we think that the whole issue of the proposal for changing Section 198A AA to 3 months is a movement forward, and we hope that we will all collectively move forward, because all the other concerns in our view have been covered. Our worry, and which is a major worry, is that the workers who have been in employment for a period of more than 3 months or 6 months or 12 months, whatever the provision you would want to make, what are, and hopefully the department can help clarify this, what are the measures over and above section 198A 2-4, what are the other provisions which can be made in order to ensure that those workers do not automatically lose their jobs, because irrespective of whatever provisions we want to make in the proposal, even if we're at 12, even if we're at 24, or if we're at 0, there are workers who've been working for periods more than that. Now, how do we
protect those workers. But the second clarification would be in relation to the proposal made by Honorable Hanare that section 198A 2, I think 198.24 should also include, should not only be about 3D, but in fact 5. Should not only be about subsection 3B, but should also be about 3A. That was the trade union in him coming out when he made that proposal. So that's my contribution, Chair. Thanks.
Honorable Khanari, and then followed by Honorable Williams.
I think we have got to be very clear that the workers we are talking about, the temporary services, what I'm talking about is vulnerable workers. That's the workers I thought when I said 3 months, that's the workers I want to protect. Because in most cases, glamorous workers have got very glamorous contracts to do what they are doing. So I'm talking about vulnerable workers who needs to be protected against super exploitation. So I wanted to put that from the beginning. The second point which I wanted to make clear is that I believe that they should be temporarily employed until it can be clear that vacancy is there. So they cannot be temporarily employed where the vacancy is there. Therefore, they must be made permanent. And I believe that 3 months is reasonable. If you're not aware as an employer that you need that vacancy after 3 months, that's very problematic. Because after 3 months, that vacancy is there. So that's particular. That's the reason why I support this. And in most cases, people who are on probation are usually on probation for 3 months. And that's why I'm saying it's reasonable to assess within 3 months whether you really have got this vacant, this post, or you don't have that particular post. And if after 3 months you still have it, then that particular person cannot become temporary.
Thank you. Honorable Williams.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to, when we're talking about, if we look at Section 44, it says application of Section 189 to employees earning below the earnings threshold. So fundamentally, we're not talking about the actor or the skilled individual. We're not talking about any, fundamentally, the people that earn below the earnings threshold are fundamentally from the lowest paid people to up to like semi-skilled people. So we mustn't think about soccer players, for instance, who are highly skilled and highly paid. Kaiser Chiefs soccer players in particular. we're talking about people that are earning below the threshold. So nobody must get confused about highly skilled lighting experts that come with to make a film in South Africa and we need to employ these people temporarily. We're talking about lower skilled people to no skilled people. They're earning below the threshold. And fundamentally, we're talking about the vulnerable workers in this particular clause. So it is here. I mean, that's what we're talking about. Thank you, Jim.
But I just again want to remind honorable members that we just did not look at the review of Section 198. This thing, it just didn't come because we wanted to do an academic exercise. It came as a result of problems experienced in the environment. When the country was faced with an economic crisis which was affecting the whole world, we decided that to be able to cater for those who are losing their jobs in this period, maybe we should look at these temporary employment services, usage of labor brokers to manage placement of people, temporary lower sitting period. But what happened was that with all those good intentions, the worst things happened. workers were treated like slaves in many companies. I'll make an example that the retailing, the dealing industry. Any company will say, retailer, that we need 100 channels for the Western Cape. Anyone who can provide us with 100 channels will get, you know, and this is the amount we are paying. And based on the agreement, the temporary employment services will serve those people. But when they are to be paid at the end of the month, the salaries that they get are not similar to those that are received by people who are full-time with a company. When these people are doing exactly the same thing, working the same hours under the same conditions, then that way it becomes an unfair labor practice. And based on those, and it's not only that they're actually paid less, but that they are owned by the labor broker. That every month when they get their salary, the labor broker gets a cut from that. And the ideal situation is in that once people are sourced and placed, there should not be any relationship between those people and the person who placed them. And that link is not only with that, it's more to do with their salary, that they must actually bid the way the rest of the workers are paid, because they're doing the same work of equal value. So because of these malpractices, we ended up getting a lot of complaints from unions, from the very temporary workers themselves. That is what has led to all these amendments. If there were no malpractice, we wouldn't be dealing with these issues now. Mm. So it is in that spirit that we are we are dealing with this matter. Committees of Parliament have been accused in the past and now that we are dancing to the music of the executive. And when we say now here, we see things differently as legislators, and this is where we want to go. We are accused of defying the executive. So, and this becomes, it becomes a bit confusing. And I think, honorable members, when we do things, we shouldn't do them because we want to make members of the executive happy. We do these things because we went through public hearings, honorable members, you know, in Parliament, and we listen to horror stories of people who are at the receiving end of this system. We know you cannot do away with exploitation. It is inherent to the system. It is there. You cannot wish it away. But what you are saying is that at least we should do away with medieval practices, you know, of neo-slavery practices, and super-exploitation, even life forms of abuse of workers, where people work more hours without any protection. If these people who, if the labor brokers had a heart, we wouldn't be discussing this thing here now. But because we dealt with people who do not care about anyone except their pockets, that's why we're stuck here. We say not all temporary employment services providers are the same. But you see, when you make laws, you look at the worst people who are the receiving end, not at the best, and try to find a balance. The suggestion, it doesn't matter how many months are there, but I think if we can reduce the number of years and months of salary that are going to be lost to workers, better. That is the little bit we can do. We cannot change the system. We need to be able to operate within the system. But we need to protect vulnerable workers. Because without them, we are doomed. So, thank you very much. Mkalipi, as your hand is raised, and if you continue, okay. It was your hand up.
On the issues that raised by Honorable Mwanganela, I need to clarify some of the issues. It's nothing other than that.
Yes. And if you could talk to the oh
don't put words in my mouth. But if you could talk to the rationale behind the 6 months, you know, if there is a scientific formulation, because in his first amount there is no scientific formulation to it.
Maybe the other area, I mean, this question on that was asked by Honorable Albert on the sector. If you look at Section 7, Section 8, page 22 of the original bill, Section 8A gives collective agreements negotiated at the Bargaining Council more precedent. Therefore, it means that if a collective agreement is reached in a metal industry that says 20 months, that takes precedent in terms of this. Therefore, there is an opening for different sectors of the accidental bargaining council for them to do that. That's what Section 8A says in terms of collective agreement. By collective agreement, you can have a different agreement. The other issue that Honorable Malano asked me to explain was the proposal put by Honorable Kanare on the putting, amending Section 5 to include 1A and 3B, if I'm for A, 3B, if I've got it correctly. Now, what created this proposal, basically, members, is that this proposal creates two entities. It creates a temporary employment services, a labor broker in the street name that is known, as an employer. That's what A does. It says there will be labor broker in the labor market. And all those workers who are employed for less than whether 6 months, 3 months, their employer is the labor broker. Now, you must treat the labor broker then in this sense, just like any other employer. And now, if now you say, if let us assume, we say A, labor broker, employer, can be mostly B2LBD, employ these employees. You cannot compare me in this sense with four workers. A different employer. Now, 5 says, after the 3 months, then that other employer is regarded also as, is deemed to be an employer. That's what this action does. It creates that division. It creates two employers, two entities here. And says, therefore, if you want to equate the first entity with the second entity, you destroy that creation that the law is trying to do. That's not a decision and argument that way. What I'm doing, I'm explaining the rationale of the section, what does it do, and what would it do when you treat them the same before that period. Because before 6 months or 3 months, it changed a different employer again. And it said, those employees, their employer is the labor broker. You are basically saying a labor broker matrix, it's an employer, it employs people for the first 3 months, they are their employer. Whatever happens to them, they will take up with the labor broker because it's their employer. If you want to make now equality arrangement, it's going to be between the workers that are working in the labor broker to be equal. That's the first 3 months. In the second house, the second 3 months, 6 months, whatever you agree on, then it leaves the labor broker that thing with the client. It says now, this period ends, your independence ends, this kind of labor broker. All the benefits of these workers that are more than 6 months should be equated to wherever you put them. That's the issue that the Dole law is bringing in. And when you say then you accept that labor broker should exist, then it goes hand in hand that you must accept that they will be employers on their own right. You accept that the employers of these people, like, as long as you take away that ability of them to be employer, it comes back to the same thing. It comes back to the same zero when you take back that ability. And that's what A and B is trying to do. And that's the issue. I'm not sure whether Honorable Nancy is getting the explanation that I'm giving on the issue. The next question that he asked was that other than the protection that is in 2, yeah, I think it's 2 or 4 years, what a protection is there. Now, remember, for the department, what the department did in this issue, the department said, what is the mischief? What is it that we need to deal with labor voting? I mean, there were 4 issues that were agreed on. The first one was the issue of equivalent wages, that workers employed by labor brokers, in many instances, tend to earn lesser than workers that are earning are employed directly. They earn less. If they do the same job, if an officer and 10 employees back in, are not more likely to earn more if they are employed by back in than employed by the labor broker. That is where the equality clause comes in, that they should be treated the same. That's how we deal with that mischief of equality. And even after 6 months, they must be treated the same. The next thing, 3 months. 2 months, whatever it is, you agree on it. 3 months. Yeah. 2 weeks ago, I was always reminded about the X.
Yeah.
Now I'm reminded about 3 months. Now, the other issue, honorable members, is that that we wanted to deal with is that workers employed labor brokers, easy to dismiss them presently. And it's difficult for those workers to take their cases to the CCMA and get recourse. That is where the dealing provision comes in, where we say you can either take the client or the labor broker, the worker can choose. These are the main issues about labor brokers that are the problem. And those are the issues that we dealt with. The issue on who pays the worker, who registers the worker, I mean, if I'm an employee and my salary is 100 rand, and I must get my salary on Friday 100 rand, and the transfer is made 100 rand on my salary on Friday, for me, as a worker, it's immaterial to transfer the money. The issue, I must get my salary. And that's where the dealing and the joining them. If I don't get my salary, I shouldn't be wasting my time not chasing the labor broker. I should go to the Fort Bucken and say, I did not get my salary. You are responsible. Fort Bucken must sort out with the labor broker, but I must get my money. And that's why we do not go on the issues of administration, who will register the employees with you, and who will transfer the money, because precisely our view, right or wrong, is that as a worker, my interest is not whether the department transfers my wages, is whether I've got my wages or not. Who transferred it, whether it's Department of Health, Department of Labor, what, for me, I'm really not going to waste my time fighting that if I've got my wages. And those are the protections that we try to build. And on top of that, if you look on the A-list that is proposed, there are 200 amendments that are not in the A-list that talk to workers being victimized for exercising their rights in terms of this law. We've made that change there in the papers in terms of in this section, in the same section. We made 2 amendments. One, protecting workers to take up cases in terms of this law so that they don't be victimized, even for going to the CCMA or reporting a case, whatever case, if you are victimized, that's the case of dismissal. And we're also tightening the issue of if you are not employed, your contract is terminated, it doesn't matter who insisted, whether it's the client is or what, it's regarded as termination, because we have problems of people with labor brokers being dismissed by the client and the labor broker saying that I don't have a choice. The client doesn't want to say I've got to end with the relationship. And those are the issues that we built in as protection to the workers in the section as a whole. On this issue of 6 months, the chair has asked to speak on it, the rationale, our rationale, the department of 6 months.
Yes, there was a RIA done on the bill. The RIA talked to the effect of regulation, what it would be. But as a department, when we took a decision that we felt that 6 months meets the requirement, it was purely, we said, in the private sector, probation ranges between 3 and 6 months in the private sector. In the public sector, probation is a year. In the public sector, we have probation for years. Okay, so this, remember this, is used also the issue of labor voting when labor brokers argue their case in the paper since last week. They say most of the workers that they employ, labor brokers, end up being employed by the client after 6 months. That's the argument that they're making. They say whether it's correct or wrong. But for us, the issue that makes us to regard 6 months as a relevant barometer is because, as you said, in the labor market, probation is between 6 and 3 months. The only outside sector here is the public sector, which we think the 6 months is not going to affect them negatively. That's how we reach the 6 months. There's no scientific research that was done that says what would be the effect of 6 months, 12 months, or this. And the same debate that I have been, here, it's the same debate that we had at Network, business. In fact, business wanted to reform us in this area, and that was the debate on the, and we agreed as a department first that 6 months give all the parties. It makes it a little bit meaningful for labor brokers to do their business for 6 months. It makes it easier for the employer to assess also the compatibility, and also for us, 6 months has been linked with the issue of peak term, and we want to have a number of months in the act. Every time you want to employ, you must consider what the act says in this section, what does it say in this section. We wanted a set of months that will go through peak term contract, temporal employment, the one temporal employment, temporal employment 184, fixed term contract, and the part-time employment. So three categories that are there. So that everywhere would know 6 months, 1 month, one, whether 3 months is run through as so that. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Mukarifi. Advocate Gordon, do you want to take your bio?
Please, Chief. I'm not speaking to the same issue as... thank you, Chief. I'm not speaking to the exact, to actually the same issue that the department has just spoken, but it does flow on. First and foremost, as Parliament's advisor, I need to say that while the reference to Volkswagen Wachen was not made, any matters we need to distance ourselves to any reference to company, it does have effects. For the legal chairs to clarify their position. Tomorrow we cannot be getting letters from Volkswagen to say that they've been used in Labour Committee associated with labour breaking, and that's clearly not the intention. So with the members' permission, Chair, and to yourself, I'd like to clarify that position for the record. Secondly, with Clause 44, we also have to take in mind that when we are looking at 198 capital A sub 6, particularly relating to the aspect of the fact that temporary service will be regulated by the sector, it states at sub 6 at the bottom of page 21 on the bill, at least 3 months prior to coming into effect of this section, which means that the operation, the coming into effect of this section, needs to be suspended for a time to allow the minister to comply with what is stated in sub 6 for that 3 month compliance issue. So I'm not sure what the direction of the committee is. Essentially what it means is, it is that if we look at 198, capital A, 1C, it says in a category of work and for any period of time which is determined to be a temporary service by a collective agreement concluded in a bargaining council, a sectoral determination or a notice published by the minister
in accordance with subsection 6 and 8. Now, in order for that regulation of a sector to happen, 6 days, at least 3 months prior to coming into the operation, which means that this section, or perhaps just 198A, 1C, has to be suspended, notwithstanding the coming into operation of this amendment bill, that it has to be suspended for, let's say, 3 or 4 months, or to a date determined by the minister. This amendment will come into operation, and people then have, the sector then has the ability to approach the minister in terms of subjects. And once that 3 months period has elapsed, that section in place is fixed. So that's just perhaps another amendment we have to look at for the A-list possibly be included in Clause 50. Thank you, Chair.
That's
not the traditional period. Chair, let me explain how this is. Amendment will take effect. Maybe it's gone through Parliament, and you say the bill comes into effect on 1 October, just to give a thumbs up that. Essentially, what sub 6 is, at least 3 months prior into coming into effect. Now, if it's coming into effect, how does the clause, how do we give effect to 3 months prior? And for that then to be regulated, it needs to be suspended for 3 months. So the or perhaps clause needs to be changed to take out that 3 month requirement, but that is an aspect that we need to give effect to in the committee. Thank you, James.
And replace it with what? Mkaribis, do you want to comment on this one before we...
I don't see this really the problem, the issue of the notice. I mean, in the meantime, I just published a notice inviting. It does not say that the law should not come into operation until that notice is exhausted. It's just a process where the minister says, I'm calling on all interested parties to tell me what they think should be the notice. That application of the notice must be done 3 months before the law comes into operation. The actual list might come in later. I mean, that's what this section is saying. It doesn't say that the list that the minister... And for me, the issue here also is that maybe that we needed some say to look at what happened, because when you publish list, market condition changes, the list needs to change. Does this section, I mean as it is, allow another publication 3 months, 3 years down the line? If the changes happen, the minimum to change, it seems that I'm not sure whether it covers it on that. But I mean, unless our colleagues are saying that the law itself, the law cannot be in operation before the minister publishes. And remember also, the minister and the presidency, the promulgation of the law is done through the department, through the presidency. The president is doing that. And the president is not going to promulgate a law. I mean, a regulation, yes, all of the issues that need to come in. I'm not sure what's the real problem that the colleagues are raising.
Okay, just before you ask, just so that when you answer the questions, you may, you know, like touch on some of the questions that you may have. Honorable Van der Velde.
Thank you, Chair, because I also want some legal clarity and perhaps we can group these items together. 198A1, my interpretation is it's A and B and then or C. Now, my question is that if we can, I can get a legal interpretation, is it A, B to group together or C, or is it between B and C? Thank you. It says 198A1, is it A stands, and B, and then the or means it's between B and C, or is the A also included in the or, if I may call it like that?
Is there any other question from the members before? Advocate Gordon.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. To answer the question of 198A1, A, B, or C, it's all. It's A stands alone, B stands alone, C stands alone. That's why we're having the discussions on the different categories of what a temporary servant is. So we cannot be classed together. It's separate categories applicable as they should happen. Chairperson, if I may, just in sub 6, what I'm speaking about the coming into our federation, perhaps the solution would be to take out that first line in sub 6, to take out at least 3 months prior to the coming into section, and then let the clause just start to read by the minister must by notice in the government gazette invite representations from the public on which categories of work should be deemed to be temporary service by notice issued by the minister in terms of subsection 1C. So then there's no suspension, or it just kicks into effect the minister legislation to them.
And what I want to check, if this law is when does it become effective? Is it retrospective, or does it become effective immediately after it is signed?
Jason, you will recall that sometime last year, long, long ago, we discussed Clause 50 of the bill and the amendment in the A list that it will be by President, through the President by proclamation in the government committee. That is the date that will, whatever that date is, that the President sets the proclamation, that is when the bill will become an act.
Very important information for me. Okay. Honorable Negemba.
Yes, President, from what I'm certain, the in terms of 198 capital letter A, 1A, come the next meeting, there will be no confusion or reflection of 6 months, it will be 3 months. I wanted that to be understood. That's point one. The second issue, Chair, is sub section 6 of 198A capital letter. I think we take the wording that the parliamentary legal advisors are presented here, that instead of having that 3 months, let that 3 months be taken out, and then it's just straight to the notice in terms of the government as that when the minister does that. I just wanted to formalize that in order when we come back next week or whatever time we will be looking at the entire amendment, we will know how will it reflect. There's no dispute on that issue. Thank you very much, Chairman.
I think we are done. Can I simply say that there's sufficient consensus on the 3 months?
Which 3 months? The one that's also not the big one.
The bigger man. Can I check with the advocate Gordon and then
thank you, Chair. Just to also highlight that even though we now have all our decisions, one cast should show and the others in principle, that members should be aware that even though it's not in the A-list on the table today, that long title will change. We will do that administratively for the next meeting because there have been substantial amounts of causes that were rejected. So all those issues in the long title balloting, the superior court bills, all those things that come out will not consequently come out of the long title. The object memo will also change substantially because when we produce a B-bill, the object memo must lead to what the B-bill now looks like, and we will also do that administratively, really for three different for this meeting. But that's just for the good purposes that members are aware to ensure that will be part of this week's process.
So we won't be surprised. This will the state advisor. No, we did not ask for radical push advice. You are owner of Underfield Business Lawyer. Over to you.
Is that an upgrade or downgrade?
Thanks, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, in addition to what Mr. Gordon said, you will... The committee's submission will use the wording of the proposed amendment to formulate the object memo and the long title.
And then also before, I also want to confirm the time period in the other places we highlighted to confirm if the committee wants to change all to 3 months, or if you can just go to where they confirm those time periods so that it's confirmed or agreed in principle for the proposed A list.
I think let's start somewhere before we get there. I was checking if there's sufficient consensus, and I could see that there is none. So we'll have to divide the committee and vote on this. No, there is being problems.
We need to formalize the decision.
Oh. Okay. Oh, yeah. No. Okay, no then. Then, yeah, there's a proposal that is seconded. It's 3 months. Are we agreed on this one?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I said it. And then the nurse. Yeah. So, yeah, you can effect the changes on the A list. Is there any other
problem? Sorry, thank you. So just to confirm now, since that's 244, since the big 3 months is there, the proposed amendment to 243 would also be 3 months for insertion here. And then there's also the... Yeah, and then on page 22 in 9.8, that insertion would be 3 months as well. That would be the proposed transitional period that the department was proposing, so that would be 3 months as well. I've highlighted that on page 11 of the A-list.
Sorry, Chair. As my colleagues call it, the big 3 months. There are some smaller 3 months or 6 months, which has got to do more with transitional matters. And I cannot see why we must now not have, in terms of the transitional period, give people enough time to adapt. We don't want job losses. That none of us around this table want that. So what I'm saying is that you have been able to change the 6 months in terms of people's employment time to 3 months. But I want to put a case forward to say, but at least for people to adapt to this new system and to come in line, cannot we then at least give them that, then sold that 6 months? Because it does affect people's operations severely. And what we don't want, the last thing we want, is unnecessary job losses because of this. So I was wondering whether it's wise now to say, but all 6 months must now just become 3 months. They will speak to vastly different issues, is my interpretation of this. Thank you.
I just think that after the law is passed, we must wait for 6 months before it can be implemented.
It can be implemented immediately, but if people need more time, that we just grant them that time to be able to adapt. Thank you.
Then what will be the use of making a law? Will be optional thing, or you can do whatever. Yeah. If you don't like 3 months, you can another 6 or...
The law is still the law, and the law...
I want to understand so that I can,
The law is the law, and the law will kick in, immediately. But there are some clauses where we give the minister a certain period within which he can give notice, we give employers a certain period within they can adapt to the new legislation, etc. And that is what I'm just trying to ask. Should we not consider keeping those time periods as it was originally proposed? But obviously, if an employer can implement immediately, that employer we would like to see implementing this. But I'm just concerned that some will not be able to get their act together within a highly limited time period, and that we will then find other huge breaches of the legislation, which will again, eventually end up in court, or we will have people saying, well, I'm in a corner, I cannot adapt quickly enough, so I rather retrench, and that we don't want. Thank you.
That we proposed, that were in principle accepted, talk to
If the law comes into operation today, there are people who are already appointed. There are people who are already appointed by a labor broker. And the debate was that you can't then expect that those contracts to end. In terms of the law, you've got to have such an arrangement giving those employers, and whether it's 2 months, 6 months, that's the decision of the members. But I'm just explaining the principle of transitional arrangement that we're debating. And if you look on A list, on page 8 of the A list, the first transitional arrangement deal with the application of section 198.1. The issue of 6 months, when does the 6 months come in? And in the proposal then was six, the issue of 3 months, sorry, the issue of 3 months, because the A-list is still requisite under the A-list, when that comes in. Therefore, it's not about how ready are the lawyers. It's about how do you make it sure that employers are able to comply. And that's what the transitional arrangement is for. And in our proposal, we link the period of the transitional arrangement to the period that is in the name. When it was 6 months, we're saying 6 months, because employees have got 6 months. They can work and be employed by labor broker for 6 months. After that, they decline. Otherwise, you'll have a situation where you've got employees who've been there older, who are employed for a longer period of labor brokers, but employees who are coming today will be employed for a shorter period. That's why the months that you put on the transitional arrangement is linked directly to the months that they should work, so that you don't have a situation where you've got two set of employees in the same unit, the same labor broker. You have those who are there. If, let us say, you ask for a longer period, you'll have then worker A working under different conditions for 8 months, for example. And then you'll have worker B, because they started after the law becomes operational, they'll have only 3 months. And that's the reason that we wanted uniformity, so that you can have the same condition in those areas.
Your hand was up there.
No, Chair, I was actually going to say what Tim Winkleby said now, that it would make it to link it, that you don't have a skewed scenario in the market.
No. Agreed.
Chairperson, may I just forget to ask this?
Honorable Thunder,
does the thing also apply to clause, is it 45, line 19? On the A list that we've received, page 13, bottom line there, your paragraph 39, that the bargaining council must also now refer a dispute with him. It has got nothing to do with this. Yeah, so again, that's 6 months' pay. That's what I've been trying to say, that we don't just replace all 6 months now with 3 months.
I think that the legal team is aware, actually, that I think that was the discussion looking at the rights of persons earning below the threshold, and I think we said that sometimes people only discover later on what their rights are. So we created a longer period of time affording them that protection. I think that's another category. But I think that as the drafting team, we're aware of that. When we finalize the document, we're aware that that falls in a different category. That's not linked to 3 months discussion we're having. A 3 month discussion is only for technical arrangements in respect, the transitional arrangements, sorry, in respect of the temporary employment services.
They'll do that when they draft, and then when we engage on Tuesday, we'll see if it's... If it agrees with what we wanted as the number. So, Honorable Nyakemba, you will answer.
No, I'm not totally against what you are saying, Chairperson. But I think in respect of 198 capital letter B, which make reference to fixed term contracts, can we find a way of
because of what the basic conditions of employment say in relation where someone's employment is terminated as a result of operational requirements, which means that a worker is entitled to 1 week's wages for each completed year of service. So the point I'm raising, Chairperson, is that because fixed-term contracts do vary sometimes, sometimes it's a project which is for 36 months or whatever months, but because it's a project. So in an event where one is employed on a fixed-term contract, if it's 12 months and above, when the contract expires, the fixed-term contract expires, then that person must be entitled to the 1 week's wages as it reflects in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act.
Honorable Khanare,
what Honorable Nyakara is proposing is that this particular person who enters into this particular contract can get rest when the contract comes to an end. And to me, it is a difference between somebody who gets retrenched and somebody who got employed in terms of a particular contract. If my contract is 6 months, it's a 6 month contract. I knew from the beginning. I can't say when it gets to an end, it must be treated as if I'm getting retrenched.
Thank you, Chair. I secretary, just the state members, namely, we had the debate some time ago, and members actually instructed us to give us a vote in principle to include that scenario in the A-list. It's on page 13B, and it's already provided for in the A-list. So, just to say that the scenario is provided for in the A-list as an amendment to the bill introduced. Thank you.
Let's check if there anyone who is not comfortable with 3 months before we move. Okay. No, there's no one. So you'll do likewise. And where to from here? No, the committee will remain. We've got minutes to look at another thing. Committee matter.
Is the decision that on 198B is 3 months, 198C is a 3 months, 198B deals with fixed term contract. Saying that nobody should be allowed to work for fixed term contract for 3 months, and 198C is part time employment.
Those who want to go can the lawyers. We don't need legal advice. Yeah. Let me say that next week when we meet, we'll be going clause by clause and then voting. Yeah. Yeah, clause by clause. Thank you.
Wednesday the 15th of May, page 1,
page 2. Page 3 and page 4. Honorable William.
I move for the adoption of these minutes.
Adoption. Honorable Van der Velde is seconding. Minutes of the 17th.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think on the meeting of the 15th, the committee, I'm trying to check where it indicated, so the committee had indicated that we need to come back to the issue of the competition fund. Yeah, so I don't know if it is that problem. Yeah. I'm just trying to check under the... Oh yeah, no, it is, okay.
Minutes of the 17th, page 1. Bladzij 1, bladzij 2.
Stel voor het antwoord. I would just like to make a comment. I think I did provide an apology for that specific day. Yeah, I normally do that. I can just check if I think one that's long.
Yeah, then.
Thank you.
Yeah. I just check it, but I don't remember getting it, maybe. It might have for that. Oh, I wasn't there. Yeah. Oh,
that's what you don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember that. Yeah.
But I was there. Mm-hmm.
Oh no, there was no apology number. Minutes of the 21st. Minutes of the 21st. Page 1. Then page 2. Manamela, second up, the Honorable Mutau. Thank you. We are second part with. We are meeting again on Tuesday, 10 o'clock, not 9. Not 9. Yeah. The venue will be communicated to you. G841 or something. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
I'm too green now.
Yeah.
I'm carrying the bag.
Thank you.